woods and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Here we go, August. A little bit of a cool down, first part of the month. And then, of course, the hot weather is going to return. I know it is, but we'll talk about that when it's going to affect here just a few minutes. Being brought to you on the Michigan Talk Network and being brought to you also by our friends at Not Just Guns. Find them online, notjustguns.com. And if you're looking for work and if you are, you know, you're a good person, okay? Make sure you hit them up. Tell them we sent you because they are the good guys in the gun business, and they have their Wednesday night auctions that are absolutely huge. They've got lots of great accessories and ammunition, and, of course, the guns part of Not Just Guns is absolutely amazing for such a small place in Mason on Cedar at 127, notjustguns.com. Go over there, see Mike Green and the rest of the guys. They are great people over there. And if you've got some skills you think you can lend to them, by all means, contact them. And also, it being Thursday when we record the show, the NRC meeting going on today. And something I'm really concerned about, Dana Nessel, Attorney General, who I'm not terribly fond of, which if you've been following us on Facebook, you already know that, is having an unprecedented closed-door session with the NRC. To what I'm going to assume is put forth her agenda about the wolf delisting, the possibility anyway of the wolf delisting. She doesn't feel that that should happen, but she's a biologist, right? Not an attorney general. So we'll talk more about that. We'll get some updates from our good friend Mike Shippa, hopefully, and pass them along here to you on the next show. Right now, though, we're going to talk walleye fishing with Lance Valentine of Walleye 101. Lance, we had some super hot weather. And now we're getting this little bit of a cool down. We always get that kind of dip during the first part of August. Then we heat up again. But how did that hot weather affect what's going on the bay? It being kind of the big shallow mud puddle that it is. But, you know, still the walleye fishery, you know, magnanimous.
First of all, I'm a little worried that you say we always have the big dip in the first part of August because it is the first part of August and I'm on the show, so I'm just wondering if there's something there you're trying to tell me.
Listen, first you pick on my texting, okay? My fat thumbs, okay? I've got fat thumbs. They don't like to text right. But now you're assuming I'm calling you a big dip. Nothing can be further from the truth.
Okay, just checking. You know, it's been an awesome summer on Saginaw Bay. We never really got... you know, the weather really, really never got really hot. So, you know, water temperatures got to the mid-70s. We never really broke that 75 mark consistently, which is kind of the demarcation point of yucky stuff. So the fishing has been absolutely fantastic, and I don't think it's going to get much hotter. I think we've kind of missed whatever's going to happen. You know, as far as scorching hot. Now, we may get a few days of scorching hot, but I just don't see the water ever getting much warmer than it is now, which means that, you know, we may not, you know, we always have, you made a good point about that gap or that, whatever you want to call that, that little lull. We always kind of have a shutoff here first, second week of August. That kind of goes for 6, 7, 8 weeks. And, you know, end of September, we start picking up again and getting the fall fishing. I don't know that that's going to happen this year. I think the fish are now starting to set up patterns that we were fishing about 3 weeks earlier last year. So the fish are 2 to 3 weeks behind on the bay. They are very, very hungry. They are very, very fat and chubby. There's a lot of bait fish in the water in places it normally is in early summer. So we're into late summer. I really think we're going to see, instead of a stop from summer, a tough fishing transition, and then the start of the fall fishing, I think that's going to be a nice, soft, easy meld, and I don't think we're ever going to go bad this year. I think the fishing is going to stay good for a long, long, long time.
Lance Valentine from Teaching Fishing joining us right now here on Wild Michigan. Lance, we had an excess surplus of rain this year that we've seemed to forgotten about, but it's still, the water levels are still kind of high. Some of them just getting almost to a semi-normal level. How's it been on the bay?
Yeah, we're up. You know, they've had to lift our docks twice already this year at Limit Beach Marina. They've moved both the, the docks up a couple times. We're probably, I would say right now, we're probably 20, 22 inches up. At one point, we were probably 28 to 30, maybe 36 inches up, depending on which way the wind blew. So, yeah, it's been a tough year for that. But, again, we you and I have talked forever about, GPS and sonar and all those things. So now, here's what happened early in the season is guys were like, well, I'm fishing 12 feet of water and the fish aren't there. Well, the fish weren't in 12 feet of water. The fish were in whatever pieces of structure were bringing them to that 12 feet of water. Well, that water now is 14 or 15 feet. So guys were in 12 feet, which was traditionally 9 or 10 feet, which really wasn't holding fish last year, this time of year, the 12-foot was. But now that 12-foot is 14 or 15 feet. The fish are in the same exact spot on the GPS. The water is just deeper. So guys who didn't catch that, didn't make that change right away, they spent a little bit of transition time really having a tough time catching fish because they were in the right depth according to what they thought, but that depth was different than last year. So what it did is it really, really kind of messed up the fishing for a little bit. You didn't see a lot of good reports because guys were in the wrong spot. Now we've got it all figured out. Fishing is awesome, and guys are really starting to put the hurting on them right now.
Now, you mentioned structure. You mentioned depth. When that depth changes, the water temperature, is that water temperature going to change dramatically or a little bit with that? And is that going to draw them to different points of structure with that temperature change?
The other thing we've had this year is we've had a lot of wind. We have had a ton. Oh, my gosh. I don't even want to remember the Detroit River. It was just windy every day. But we've had a lot of wind on the bay. So what happens, one of the beauties of that, even though it can be frustrating and it can cancel trips, a strong north-northeast wind can be terrible for fish, especially for the charter guys, because you do get really, really bad weather. But what that does is that has kept enough cool water rolling in with that northeast, north-northeast wind, rolling in some of that cooler water from the deeper parts of the bay. That has kept the inner bay not too hot. And I do believe, I haven't put a probe down because I usually don't, in the bay, because we're usually fishing shallow waters. But if we're 75 at the surface, I wouldn't be surprised if we weren't 3 or 4 degrees less than that at the bottom in 18, 20 feet of water. So the warmer waters that do trigger fish and do create activity and do get the metabolism going, make them bite more, but can get to a point where it gets too hot. We've never gotten to that too hot point this year, and that's why the fishing has stayed amazing. I've actually extended my, usually I'm done by now, I've extended my charter season another 2 weeks so we can take advantage of this really good fishing.
Lance Valentine, teaching fishing, joining us here right now. Now, I saw Lake Michigan had a big influx of cold water.
Yeah.
We normally don't talk about walleye fishing in Lake Michigan. We usually reserve the salmon fishery for that. But how do you think that affected fishing in general? Because that was like, hey, fall's here, boom.
Well, we were over last week to do our traditional salmon trip. We usually do in August. We had to move it this year because of life sometimes gets in the way. And we were there, our friend that we went with, Lance Keene from Steelhead Hunter Charters, he was on some big fish. He was getting, high 20s every day, had a couple 30s over the week prior to where we went. When we went, we got over there Sunday. Our plan was to fish all day Monday and then Tuesday morning. We got over Sunday in the afternoon, and the wind had started blowing, 20, 25, 30 miles from the north. And what it did, those fish were all set up. There was a nice thermocline and 200 feet of water. Those fish were in 75, 80 to 100 feet of water just above that thermocline. You had them pegged. You could see them on the sonar. You could catch them. Well, that north wind blew. We didn't even get a chance to fish until almost 6 o'clock on Monday because it blew all day Monday morning. And what it did is it took all of that cold water, pushed it up on the beach. So now the break was, 25 feet down over 40 feet of water, which is really, really hard to target salmon because it's just hard to put all that stuff in that little small congested area. But it definitely blew the cold water in there. And the guys who are really successful walleye fishermen on the Lake Michigan shore, they know that wind makes a huge difference on the water temperature and how much bait is in the area.
All right, Lance Valentine teaching fishing to us here on Wild Michigan.
You you can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State, all over the world, wildmichiganradio.com. You can pick up our podcast and check out our Facebook page and all the other great stuff that we're attempting to put forth in the outdoors, being brought to you by Not Just Guns. There's a link to them as well, notjustguns.com. Wednesday night auctions. If you don't like what you get on the auction, they will take care of you. That is something that, trust me, as many auctions as I go to, that never happens. You get it, that's it. They are not like that, and Not Just Guns. Make sure you find them in Mason on Cedar at 127, notjustguns.com. The good guys in the gun business. And earlier this morning, I had the opportunity to speak with one of my favorite Flintoids. I'm talking about my brother, Mark Farner, formerly of Grand Funk Railroad, and he is going to be doing a show in Durand here. I believe it's in a couple of weeks here in August. It'll be a big, big 50th anniversary, 1969 to now. Mark has been on the road doing rock and roll, and my other favorite Flintoid, Lance Valentine, joined me. Right, I got that word from him. Because
go to YouTube. There's actually a song that is "I'm a Flintoid."
Really?
Yeah.
You guys are your own. You know that, and I mean that in the kindest of ways. Mark has been a friend of ours since we started the show, as we are coming up on 14 years. And
we actually went to the same high school.
Did you really?
Yeah. Absolutely.
How cool is that? He's a great guy, dude. And,
not at the same time, but...
Yeah. Oh, no. So, I wasn't going to put that one out there.
Yeah, check it out. There's a song called "I'm a Flintoid," and it talks about... It's pretty cool. If you're from Flint, you know the landmarks in the song. It actually makes a lot more sense, but we have our own little song.
Well, cool. I'll be checking that out.
Well, I'm a Flintoid.
You're a Flintoid, and I was at Donna's Donuts the other day, so I'm a...
Ooh, you know, yeah, you're a Flintoid.
I'm a transplant.
But you're kind of a West Sider, though. I'm an East Sider, so watch it.
Well, I'm a Lansing guy, North Side, so, you know, North Side against the world.
There you go, buddy.
But Lance Valentine, teaching fishing, joining us right now. I kind of lost track of where the hell I was going with this, but you know, we were talking about the bay and how the hot weather really hasn't affected it. But you know, we can't predict what we're going to get weather wise. I mean, look what the heck happened in spring. Technically, we went from fall to summer, and we're going to go from summer to what? You know, how do we plan or make the adjustments accordingly for what we have going on?
That's a good question. So a couple things happen as we kind of get into, and I would call early August kind of the end of what we call, you know, the summer period. So we're kind of getting into late summer now, even though the calendar, you know, we're looking at, well, we're not back in school. The fish are starting to see, you know, we're starting to see some cooler nights, not cold nights yet, but we're definitely starting to see some cooler nights. We're starting to see what, you know, temperatures in the morning are obviously not as hot as they were, you know, all that time, you know, a couple of weeks ago where we got up and it was 75, 80 degrees in the morning. Now we're getting up, and I was up on the way to Saginaw Bay the other day, and it was 56. So what's happening is those fish are starting to kind of feel that, and they're coming out of summer patterns, which are very, very consistent because the weather in the summer is traditionally consistent. It kind of stays the same every single day, every single day, every single day. But now we're starting to see a few changes that they're starting to feel. You're starting to, you know, if the guy's doing any scouting in their deer woods, they're starting to see some changes from summer activity into kind of early fall activity already. And that happens on the water, too. So what we have to pay attention to is we have to start looking and start paying more attention to bait. Because now, as the water starts to cool a little bit, we go from the summer to the fall transition. Fish are not going to be moving as often as they do. So in the summertime, fish will move a long way every day to look for bait. They'll get in open water, and they'll just swim and swim and swim, and they'll eat a little bit, and they'll swim a little bit, and they'll eat a little bit, and they'll swim a little bit. So we can get this nice open water pattern we control for long distances. As we start moving into the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, what's going to happen is we're going to transition into fall. Because remember, we're basically at the end of any bait fish hatching. So all the bait fish that we're going to have for the year are basically done. So now every time a bait fish in the lake gets eaten, there's one less bait fish. So now bait gets less available. There's less food for the fish. And the body is starting to signal, hey, fall is coming, winter's coming, spawning's starting to come. It's time to start fattening up. So what happens is these fish go from these great, big, huge, giant pods that are just swimming through open water. They start to break up in smaller pods and really start to concentrate and find a place where bait's going to be and stay there. So we'll slowly start to see a transition from long trolling passes. You know, we might start in 12 feet of water, go to 22 feet of water and catch fish the whole way. That's going to start to stop. Fish are going to get very specific about what depth they're at, very specific about how deep of water they're over, very specific about where they suspend, and they're definitely going to be close to bait. They're not going to go searching for bait anymore. They're going to find bait and stay with it. So our fishing has to start getting a little bit tighter, a little bit tighter, a little bit tighter. We need to start working at staying on fish a little bit more than just randomly trolling and coming across another pod.
Lance Valentine teaching fishing here on Wild Michigan. And Lance, our daylight is changing as well.
Yeah.
We're losing the daylight. How does that affect? I mean, we know water temperature's got probably the biggest factor on what the walleye are doing. But what about the light? I mean, shadows, reflection, time, and all the other that's involved with that.
Well, you know, the big thing about that is the instinctive trigger to any wild animal that, you know, summer's over and it's time to start thinking about what I need to do to get through the winter time. So as that daylight gets less and less every day, those fish start to react. And the transition I just talked about kind of starts to happen. You know, the other thing that happens is, remember, now as the daylight starts to fade, and again, we're losing, two and a half minutes a day, whatever it is. It's not a lot. But remember, walleyes have a huge advantage over shallow water bait, specifically perch. Perch are basically blind. In the times of day where daylight changes from no light to a little bit of light in the dawn, and then the dusk again where we have light and we transition into dark, there's about an hour window there where perch are basically blind. So you see a really increase in shallow water, weed-oriented, shallow water rock-oriented, where walleyes are feeding on perch. You see this burst of activity in these shallow areas. Well, we're getting more of that because it takes longer for the sun to come up, takes longer for the sun to set. So those early morning, that dawn and dusk period where walleyes have a huge advantage over perch in shallow water cover is extending every day. So your morning needs to start in shallow water, around weeds, around rocks where there are a lot of perch. Take advantage of where the walleyes have a sight advantage, where they're feeding on perch, and then they move out a little bit deeper as the day goes on, then move back in again. It has nothing to do with the walleyes moving, or the sun is too bright and they get out of shallow water. That doesn't happen. What happens is they have a huge sight advantage over their prey in shallow water, specifically perch. They have a huge advantage in those transition times of daylight to no light. Take advantage of that early in the morning and late in the afternoon. It just gives you a little bit extra fish as opposed to have to go out in deep water and start, you know, chase them around and try to find them.
All right, Lance Valentine teaching fishing. Find him on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, teachingfishing.com. And again, join him on these live video seminars, or webinars, as they are called, I guess, that you are doing. Sonar was this week, and
yeah,
you got more coming up. So make sure you check him in on that.
Yep.
Dude, thank you as always.
Yep. Thanks, buddy.
Appreciate it. Lance Valentine, teaching fishing here on Wild Michigan.
This is Cuz Strickland with Mossy Oak, and you're listening to Wild Michigan with Duran Martinez.
It sits above the mantle on a couple rusty nails, and it's worth a bunch of money.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State,
the good Lord,
via the Michigan Talk Network, all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com. And we are moving forward, talking a little bit about, and I know this is kind of a weird time to talk about food plots and properties and the like. Here we are in August. We're just a couple of months away from the opening day of bow season. But that's not to say that you can't do a fall food plot in August, and we're going to talk about that in a couple of seconds here with Chad Thalen. First, I want to remind everybody that we are being brought to you by Not Just Guns. Online, notjustguns.com. They are located in Mason on Cedar at 127. Wednesday night, they do a phenomenal auction. And Thursday, you can go pick up your gun when you purchase it. And if you don't like it, by all means, I'm sure they will work something out with you. They're great people over there, Mike Green and his staff. Looking to expand the staff also at Not Just Guns. Find them again, notjustguns.com on Cedar at 127 in Mason. And right now we're going to talk to my good friend Chad Thalen. Stony Creek Outdoor Properties is his company. And Chad, you are literally spraying right now as we speak, maintaining a food plot. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Hopefully everything comes through okay. Yeah, we're out doing some work in Clinton County this morning.
Now, it's kind of funny because, you know, we've had reports from the boat. You know, we've had reports from the turkey woods with our good friend Al Stewart. You know, we've had everything, but I don't think we've ever had anybody spraying a food plot.
Excellent.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because we've had this issue with CWD here in Michigan for a few years now. The baiting issue is taking a beating. It's gone back and forth with it, and now we are, you know, there's a lot of people that have moved to food plots, and I don't know, Chad, is it as strong as it was a few years ago when it seems everybody and their brother was on board with the food plot?
Yeah, I think it's definitely being talked about more now. If you watch the social media forums and my emails and phone calls and text messages, I believe there's more interest in it now than ever, and it's interest from, you know, people who typically would have, you know, just thrown some bait out there in the past. And this gives us an opportunity, you know, to teach people, you know, let's manage your entire property instead of just putting up a feeder. You know, let's look at the woodlot, let's look at some open field, let's look at some wetlands, timber stand improvements. Gives you the opportunity to reach a whole bunch of people who, you know, just in the past were just, you know, and content with throwing some bait out there.
Chad Thalen with Stony Creek Outdoors, Outdoor Properties. You can find them online, stonycreekoutdoors.com, joining us right now. Chad, let's talk about how much area you need for a food plot or to at least manage whatever property you have, because not everybody has 10 acres, 20 acres, or even two, for that matter. How much do we need to make it a place to draw whitetail in, and maybe, you know, how much area do we need to, like, maybe even better improve the habitat?
Well, you know, it's a case-by-case basis for sure. You know, are you in heavy ag country, you know, southern lower Michigan? Are you northern Michigan, where it's all wooded and some sandier soils? So it's going to be a case-by-case basis, and that's why, you know, we offer consultation services. And it's very hard to just talk on the phone with somebody and tell them what they need. Unless they've emailed me or sent me, you know, an aerial photograph of the property, you know, we've done consultations just over the phone as well. But, you know, if you're in southern Michigan, you know, if you're in ag land and the deer are being fed, you know, in the summer months, you know, by the neighboring farmers, corn, soybeans, sugar beets, whatever else, then, you know, let's look at getting you some late season kill plots that would be attractive for November, December. When you know, the neighboring farm crops are off the field. And then let's also, you know, get working on your timber. A lot of people that, you know, don't understand that, you know, you can feed a lot of deer just by managing your woodlot. You don't have to have a pristine food plot. If you can manage your timber, get that canopy, that overstory down and get sunlight down to the ground, you can provide thousands of pounds of forage in your woods and not even have to plant a food plot. A chainsaw or some hack and squirt methods to remove some you know, non-quality trees, non-timber harvestable trees. Get that natural regrowth going, you'd be surprised how much you can do. So, you know, you can add those two things together. Maybe you only need then a half an acre of an actual food plot if you combine it with your other things that you could do in your woods.
Chad Thalen is our guest here right now on Wild Michigan. And Chad, it's kind of funny. I mean, just in conversation with you, how things have changed over the past 10 to 14 years, as long as we've been doing this show, from just throw this stuff down, mix it into the dirt, it'll grow and attract deer, to there's more of a science to this than what we've been taught in, you know, in previous years. And speaking with you, I mean, there's a lot to it.
Yeah, sure. And it all starts with your soils, you know, ultimately. It's, you know, if you're in beach sand, you know, you're probably not going to do a whole lot. there are some things, you know, you can use to build your soil. Buckwheat, rye, wheat, you know, rotations of that for years can build your soil up to that, maybe the point where you can grow some clover or alfalfa and things like that that take some you know, better soils. So, the soil test is the number one factor. If your pH isn't right, your plants are not going to be able to extract the minerals out of the soil. So if guys are not putting down lime when they need it, but yet they're spending $100 an acre on, you know, 624-24 or triple 19, well, it can all be for a waste, because if a plant can't uptake, you know, the nutrients from that fertilizer, then there's no point of putting it out there. So starts with the soil and the pH, and then you can go from there. But yes, there's a lot of just so many cool things going on. You know, there's a lot of guys doing what I do now. Mm-hmm. You know, back when I started, there was hardly any. It's been almost 20 years now that I've been doing this. There's a lot more education out there. There's a lot more attention to food plots and timber stand improvements, which is all a good thing. And obviously, the social media platforms now where everybody can share ideas and
sure.
And beat each other up and post pictures of their beautiful food plots and all that stuff is all mostly a good thing.
Yeah, I don't, you know, back in the day, I don't recall, you know, guys sharing pictures of their food plots saying, hey, this is sexy. But now it's a whole other story. And because it's not only benefiting whitetail either. It's benefiting all the animals that are around that area, especially our game animals. But I mean, it's just good for the environment in general, too, to have a nice balance of things going on. We're speaking with Chad Thalen. His website is stonycreekoutdoors.com. We're going to talk more with Chad in a couple minutes, so hang on, if you don't mind. And, okay, we're going to talk more with Chad. He's out on the Ranger right now doing some spraying of a food plot, and we're going to talk a little bit about the property end. Maybe you're looking for a piece of property. Well, you know what? Stony Creek Outdoor Properties will have that to talk about here in a few minutes as well. Appreciate you joining us. Make sure you hit us up on the website, wildmichiganradio.com. We're being brought to you by Not Just Guns in Mason. NotJustGuns.com. They are the good guys in the gun business.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at WildMichiganRadio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Down in the holler, old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar, keeping that chain pulled tight, waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State, all over the world, wildmichiganradio.com, being brought to you by Not Just Guns and Mason, located on Cedar at 127, notjustguns.com. And make sure you check them out for their Wednesday night auctions, plus all of the other in-store firearms, pre-owned and new firearms, accessories, and of course they also have a nice line of suppressors there, and ammunition, and good people to take care of you as well. So again, notjustguns.com in Mason, Cedar Street at 127, Not Just Guns, the good guys in the firearms business. Talking with Chad Thalen right now. Chad, part two of what you're doing is selling the properties, not only for food plots, but, you know, maybe for hunting, for fishing, whatever the case. You know, economy right now, I'm going to say, is pretty damn good. And the real estate business, as far as homes is concerned, I mean, things are getting snatched up in my neighborhood left and right. But how are things in the general property end?
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot of buyers out there right now, you know, with their recreational land. Not as strong, you know, as homes, obviously, because everybody needs a home, but not, well, everybody does too need their recreational hunting property, but not everybody gets to have that. So, you know, it's a want over a need, but yeah, things are strong. My inventory is low because we've sold almost everything I've had listed. We're be listing a nice little 36-acre Jackson County piece, a very popular and famous deer management cooperative. That's coming real soon, the next couple weeks. Hopefully, I don't think it'll take long to sell that one. But, you know, I seem to end up getting a lot of large acreage parcels, which obviously are the means large dollars. And so, you know, that's a price point that only, you know, a handful of people are prepared to pay. You know, I'm always out there looking for those 10s and 20s and 30-acre listings because, you know, those are affordable for almost everybody. You know, payments are not that high on something like that. Interest rates are low. And yeah, real estate's doing really well. In fact, I just, in the last couple weeks, opened my own real estate company, Stony Creek Realty. And it's just me for now, but we're going to be taking on two to three realtors with us as well shortly. But, yeah, I've been doing real estate stuff for just over 10 years now. And it's very compatible with the, you know, wildlife habitat work that I do.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of goes hand in hand. So, and I think that's why you're seeing, you know, again, when I started the food plot business, there was very few guys doing it. Now there's tons of guys. When I started selling hunting and recreational property, there was very few guys out there doing it. Now there's, you know, 20 or 30 in Michigan doing it. So it's, and there's a lot of land managers doing, you know, both wildlife habitat work and real estate because it is such a good, that's so compatible. And you can, you know, help your client from start to finish, you know, work sure. on the property, sell them the property, work on it. You know, my involvement with QDM and QDMA, you know, helps people, you know, I can help them manage their deer herd and their timber and their open ag land and all that good stuff.
It's kind of nice to have that all in one package. Speaking with Chad Thalen here, start, like you said, start to finish. When you're looking for a piece of property, you find somebody that has that particular piece of property, then you're like, okay, what do I do now? You know, you can't just go out there and throw a tree stand up. I mean, you could, but to work that property to make it benefit you in the long run is definitely something that is nice to have access to.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, what else do you do? You know, you buy your property and stand there and look around and you look up, you look down, look around. It's like, well, where do you start? You know, and so there's lots of consultants around Michigan, you know, and it's money well spent, whether it's $500 or $2,000 for a day's consultation. It's money well spent. You know, you can waste that kind of money in fertilizers in the first couple of years doing things wrong. And so, yeah, having somebody that can walk the property with you, you know, and I've shown clients, you know, 10, 15 different properties before they finally decided on one because, you know, I've showed them things that they thought, oh, geez, you know, I never would have thought of this. Yeah, I guess this isn't the one for me. You know, whether it was there was absolutely no timber value on it or, you know, there was $75,000 worth of timber on it that they didn't recognize. And so, yeah, a good consultant, both habitat and real estate-wise, will definitely pay for itself.
Chad Thalen is our guest here, joining us on Wild Michigan. Stony Creek Outdoor Properties is where you can find him. StonyCreekOutdoors.com is his website. Chad, how does it vary between buying land and buying a home? I mean, I get the process of buying is very similar, but structure wise, it's got to be very different.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of lenders, you know, out there. If you have to finance, if you can't pay cash. If you have to finance, there aren't many lenders out there. You know, Greenstone Farm Credit and the Union Bank here in the Lansing area. Those are two. Almost all my clients use Greenstone Farm Credit. And, you know, so you got some stipulations with them that are different than homes. The terms can be different. Your down payment is usually can be some of the biggest hurdle, you know, 20 to 30% down. You know, that can get challenging for people. That's probably the biggest hurdle, actually. You know, the payment, when you spread a payment out, you know, 10, 15, 30 years, you know, on a $150,000 piece of property, that payment isn't that high, but coming up with $20,000 to $50,000 down is usually the hurdle.
Yeah.
But that's why, you know, if we can identify a parcel of land that's got, you know, $35,000 in timber value on it, you know, we can get contracts written up with a timber buyer and a logging company, you know, to pay for some or maybe all of your down payment, and you not have to touch any of your savings or anything like that.
Yeah, that's actually quite beneficial, too. I mean, and knowing what you can take, how much you can take out of there and still be able to have a decent property for hunting is important as well.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, if you've got marketable timber, you know, it's time to get it out of the woods. The only caveat to that is, you know, if the timber values have dropped, you know, tremendously, you're going to want to hang on to those walnuts and hard maple and cherry and, you know, your veneer logs are worth a lot when the prices are good. But if the prices dive down, then, you know, it's time to just let them sit in the woods for a while. But
sure.
If prices are good, get them out of the woods. You know, that opens up, gets rid of the canopy in the forest, gets you maybe your down payment, plus gets you a heck of a good head start on, you know, your food plot in the timber.
Chad Thalen's our guest here on Wild Michigan. How much, I mean, and I know this is kind of a difficult question to ask because it's a different scenario every time around, but trees to open area ratio, is there a good mix just in general terms?
No, it really depends on the canopy, you know. So I'm literally staring at a large cottonwood tree right now, and, you know, cottonwood doesn't really have any value in the timber market, but, you know, this canopy in the woods here is 30 feet by 30 feet. So, you know, that one tree, you know, if you can visualize the sun up in the sky and it's casting a shadow down, that tree is casting a shadow down to the forest floor, you know, that 30 by 30 canopy could be, you know, casting a huge shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting just that one tree out of the way could create you a, you know, 50 by 50 foot small opening down at the forest floor, which is going to regenerate and be growing, you know, new forbs and brush and small saplings and trees and stuff like that. That's down, you know, anything below your shoulder height, you know, a 6 foot
mm-hmm.
tall person, and anything below shoulder height is basically what the deer can reach.
All right.
For forage.
Chad Thalen, appreciate you joining us. StonyCreekOutdoors.com. Got a little bit of an insight. We'll get him back on here over time to learn a bit more. We'll let you get back on the Ranger, back to the food plots, but we appreciate you joining us. Thanks to Lance Valentine for joining us in the first hour of the show as well, and thanks to Mark Farner for letting us use this tune called Funkstang on Wild Michigan.